Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations. And welcome everybody to Aggressive Negotiations. We are so glad to be back after just a slight holiday, a little life day celebration, you know, some porgs roasting on open fires, and wow, I gotta say, Octu is quite nippy this time of year, but with me, as he is always, Jedi Master John Mills here to talk some Star Wars.
Yes, unfortunately, I got lost and I wound up on Dagobah for Christmas time. I can tell you
that's why you didn't ever come around.
That's
true. I had like roast pork. Mm. I had like sriracha pork. I had porked out.
And there I was stuck just eating root leaf. And it's really tough, man.
I'm sorry,
it's
man. Really tough.
You know what though? Life day is what you make of it, and it's all about friends and family. And that's why I'm glad to be back on Aggressive Negotiations with you, Matt.
Me too. I'm so glad to be back. You know, we had a huge thing happened. We had a brand new film come out, The Last Jedi, and so we actually are going to touch on some of that tonight. But before we do, we wanted to remind you, we're all over the place. You can find us on Twitter, at The Jedi Masters. That's the show account, and then, of course, the network account is at Join Nerd Party. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We are wherever you get your podcasts, though a great place to go is Apple Podcasts, which you can rate and review us, you can let people know what you think of the show, help them find the show. I mean, there are a plethora of Star Wars podcasts out there. So if you like Aggressive Negotiations, let people know by giving us a star rating review. So when they go a searching for those, we are higher up in those rankings, so that really helps out. And hey, whatever you have to say about the show, we'll let you hear your name be shouted out on our show. So review and rate us, and we'll give you a thank you and read what you said. And then last but not least, we got the website, to thenerdparty.com, where you can find all the shows that are happening on The Nerd Party. We have a brand new show. We've got one devoted now to Doctor Who.
That's right.
So many other things happening, so make sure you check that out. And if you'd like to maybe send us a long-form email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and that'll come to John and I, and we will be able to respond to you in kind. And maybe it'll be something we'd want to read on the show, or maybe you have show ideas, or maybe you just want to say hi, which we love. So go over, do all mm-hmm. those things, mm-hmm. find us all over those social media outlets. But John, I had a question for you.
Yeah.
In regards to The Last Jedi. You know, we've done our review, we talked about it over in the 602 Club. If you want to know kind of more of what we thought, please do check that out. But as we do on this show, we don't really do straight up reviews most of the times. We just kind of talk about topics. And one of the topics that came up was Rey's parentage.
Yes.
Which mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. answer was that her parents are a nobody. And so, one, before we even dive into the main question that I have for you about that, do you think that's the case? Or do you think we're going to find out maybe in episode 9 that they've kind of done a little tomfoolery and that's not quite the case?
I think it's the case for now. I think that they have plenty of room, since Rian Johnson has admitted that they didn't really have a roadmap of, you know, character history or future or stuff like that. It's entirely possible that they decide not to have that be the truth. But I would say that as of this moment, as of right now, yes, that's the case. She is an ordinary child of extraordinarily bad parents, apparently. And, I mean, in all honesty, it does resolve the question of why she would have been left with Unkar Plutt to begin with, because a good person wouldn't necessarily... I mean, you know, you have, of course, the Jean Valjean and Thénardier thing over in Les Mis and everything like that. You know, bad circumstances, necessary decisions. But it fits with what we know of her life. It fits with other things. But I think they definitely still have wiggle room if they want it. They could even reference the cave scene in The Last Jedi and say, oh, well, there was your hint of something more about her. Where do you stand with it?
I definitely believe in the film that Kylo Ren thinks it's the truth. And so that when he tells it to Rey, she thinks it's the truth. But whether or not it actually is the truth, I think is questionable. And so I think you're right on in saying that at the moment that is the answer. But I don't truly believe that by the time we get through episode 9 that she will be a complete nobody. Now, that does connect to Anakin because in a lot of ways Anakin is a nobody from a nowhere planet.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that's special about him is that he's a virgin birth. I mean, really, that's the only thing special about this kid that's a slave. And it is interesting that, you know, obviously, Rey is pretty much the same thing. She's a slave, almost, and stuck on this planet. And so I think that's very interesting. So it makes me wonder if maybe there could possibly be some other connections that Rey has in common with Anakin that make her maybe a new chosen one or the chosen one or, you know, I don't know.
I think as a baseline, you'd be okay with her being the child of nobodies, right? I mean, because like you said, Anakin is a virgin birth is a pretty special thing, but in essence, to the galaxy, there's nothing that makes anybody sit up and notice the name Skywalker until Anakin becomes a Jedi.
I think the thing that, for me, I struggle with her if she is just a nobody, is that, so the legacy then of the Skywalker line seems diminished quite a bit in a lot of ways. So I would be frustrated if for some reason she's not something else that would help alleviate that frustration. And let me put it this way. So my main question became this, because I've been thinking about this. And so Anakin Skywalker, we have alluded to in the prequels that Darth Sidious's master, Darth Plagueis, had a hand maybe in creating life from the midichlorians. And it's vaguely hinted at that that could possibly be Anakin, right?
Well, I think that Sidious definitely wants Anakin to make that connection in his brain, to plant the seed of doubt.
Right. And also I think, he obviously wants him to think that, hey, we can do the same thing, so that way we can save the one that you love. But my question became this. So Qui-Gon thinks that Anakin is a virgence in the Force, like a true virgence, like created by the Force.
Yeah.
Because there's no father. But what if the Skywalker line really is a divergence in the Force, in the sense that it is the Force being forced to create something? And Rey is the response, the true virgence in the Force, that is the response to correct the mistakes that started so long ago when the Force was forced to do what it didn't want to do.
Let me tell you why I don't subscribe to that, why I don't like that specific read, is because I think that Luke and Leia are the specific response to Anakin. I think that Luke and Leia, if you're going to say that Anakin... And I'm not saying this is invalid. Like it works even if you sit there and you say, wow, Sidious might be telling the truth. Let's take it on face value that Sidious is telling the truth and leading Anakin to that truth, saying, you know what? Darth Plagueis was messing around with the Force and it might have led to you, son. Fine. The response becomes Luke and Leia, because Luke and Leia are the ones who are the response to Vader. They're the ones that are the new hope, that bring, you know, balance and order and all of those sorts of things, and the possibility of another line and all of that type of stuff after the Jedi have been wiped out and a new order can rise and all of those sorts of things. Rey, working as a response, would work as a response to Luke's failure, the problem becomes timeline for me, because Anakin makes his, you know, his series of bad decisions and the children show up. Mm-hmm. Luke makes his bad decision after Rey has shown up. So, I mean, you know, you can sit there and debate it till it's blue in the face, but there seems to be an arrhythmic value then introduced, because it would be, it would then maybe make sense to take the storyline and say, well, Luke screwed up with Ben way earlier than The Force Awakens, and so the galaxy should be in even more turmoil and tumult and those sorts of things. But I think they're backed into a corner where that can't be the case. Now, does that mean that it absolutely has to be that way? No, I mean, Rey sort of discovers her powers when it's necessary. But, you know, I think that diminishes Luke, is what I think that does.
Right, right. Well, and I mean, that's a question that I think I'm kind of wrestling through with this whole idea, because if Rey is not somehow linked to some sort of Skywalker line, look, the Last Jedi, Luke ends on a high note, right? He goes out on a high note.
Yeah.
He comes back to kind of being the Luke of Return of the Jedi, in the sense that he re-embraces those values to which he had, and he brings himself back, and he makes sure that he is not the Last Jedi, even though he almost did a pretty good job of screwing that up. And so all that Rey is left with is the Jedi texts and this legend of Luke Skywalker that she holds to, which the legend of Luke is him redeeming his father, like seeing the good in him and giving him that opportunity to turn. And so what I wonder then, if Rey is just a nobody, then maybe she's not a response to some sort of like, you know, demon vergence of Anakin, but maybe she is just a new vergence of the Force meant to bring the Jedi back in a way that's not connected with the baggage of the past, but only the true essence of what the Jedi are meant to be. You know, Luke still has a lot of baggage, I think, with it, because it seems like the order maybe he even tries to create, and the way that he tries to pass on his knowledge to Ben and everything maybe seems very, you know, in line with what we'd seen before. And so maybe Rey is meant to be this kind of new, the next generation, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the thing is, you hit on something that I've been wrestling with ever since The Force Awakens, and something that I don't think I'm ever going to get an appropriate answer to, is this trilogy. And we've discussed this in previous episodes about a concern that I had that it was going to diminish the redemption of Darth Vader. And I think that that has happened with both of these movies now. Like, Force Awakens sets it up. In a way that made me uncomfortable, and this follows through in a way that confirmed my fear that the idea of redemption is devalued in a lot of ways with this, which is funny because of, you know, if a theme is let go of the past and don't prosecute the past, well, then giving people an opportunity to redeem and rehabilitate themselves is key part of that sort of process. But all of that aside, Rey, like, when you say Rey is going for the true essence of what it means to be the Jedi, we agree that the Jedi, by the time the Republic is ready to fall and everything like that, they are meant to be wiped out, and they're supposed to be a new version. Like, it just changes an interpretation of Return of the Jedi that I thought worked better.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean it's the only read of Return of the Jedi? No, but the read of Return of the Jedi, the way that it stood for decades, was Luke is going to pass on what he learned, but what he learned was not to be a Jedi per se, but to be a new type of Jedi, not even going back to the basics. And the thing is, we've talked about this too, where I said, you know, Luke's mistake, I said this back when we were talking about The Force Awakens, Luke's mistake must be that he went back and tried to reestablish the Jedi as they were. So this film supports that, but I don't think that it follows through, because his mistake is to try to establish the Jedi as they once were. And then at the end of the film, the point is to reestablish the Jedi as they once were. Like, you know how it's like it says let go of the past, but then it's leaning on it as a crutch to say, but build on the past. Like, that's almost a conflicting message right there. That's very difficult to resolve.
Yeah, because what it seems like to me is that it comes down to specifically with, and this is where I think for me the storyline of Rey is the strongest point of the story, because it's where I think the themes work the best. And they're the clearest in this sense of like where all the messages kind of like are supposed to boil down to. And, you know, I think that for her struggle for identity is mirrored with the struggle of identity for the Jedi. What are they supposed to be? You know, are we supposed to get rid of the Jedi completely? Are there supposed to be no Jedi like Luke says? It's time for the Jedi to end, which... we'll have to do a whole other show about the complete arrogance of Luke Skywalker thinking that the Jedi must end just because he failed. What a complete a-hole to think that.
I mean, seriously.
We
are of a mind, brother. This is good. I mean, that's going to take some work.
Palpatine was never that arrogant. Okay, that's a level of arrogance that's just absurd to me. But that's beside the point. This idea of identity, you know, and questions of who we are, the whole movie kind of is about this idea of like bloodline and upbringing and you know, what are we? Are we only what we're like made to be in like a kind of a Man of Steel way? You know, like, are we only like we can only be one thing, or do we get to choose? You know, and in the end, I think they come down in that very Dumbledore way of saying it's our choices that make us who we are. And Rey takes the Jedi texts, and so all she's left with is these pure texts, this pure word, you know, the Jedi scripture basically, and the best example of the Jedi that was had, which was Luke redeeming his father. Of doing it a different way than even Yoda and Obi-Wan thought was possible.
But Luke had already done that by breaking that cycle. Luke had already had that victory. So there's a scrubbing, which I still agree is a problem with the way The Force Awakens approached things, where it just said, yeah, forget that 30 years. Well, that's tough to do.
Hey, you sound a lot like me on our Force Awakens shows where I was complaining about all the history.
Yeah, but I also remember on our...
You've come around to that.
No, I haven't come around to that.
You've seen the light. I'm so glad to know.
Yeah, no. Just listen, man. The debate about The Force Awakens has been had, and The Last Jedi, I think, is going to dominate everything now.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that the most puzzling thing about Rey's non-sort of importance, like, they hedge their bet. She's important, but she's not important. Her past doesn't matter, but she's obsessed with reestablishing, like, you know, all of these sorts of things, is The Last Jedi's story with Rey doesn't seem to build on what The Force Awakens set up. And I think that is the key structural issue, is that these two films are supposed to work like interlocking puzzle pieces,
right?
And they don't. And I know that the popular counterpoint argument is, let go of your expectations. You can't expect that. Yes, I can. Because
it would be like any movie giving you something like, you know, the Chekhov's gun, right? And then never using the Chekhov's gun. And then you're like, but that was Force Awakens and the Last Jedi do that completely with all of these things.
I drew over on 602 comparisons to Nolan's treatment of Batman. If I come out of Batman Begins and I'm like, wow, yeah, okay, all right, and then The Dark Knight seems to regress Batman in some way, I'm going to say, well, that was weird. That didn't quite work the way that they set it up. So you can't sit there and play you can play the expectations thing with Force Awakens in terms of how the story is going to go, and you can debate about whether your expectations for how the story should go after Return of the Jedi plays into your your reception of that and those sorts of things. But I think there's a fair expectation that Rey's storyline, what is maddening about it is her parentage works as not being significant parentage. We've reasoned it out ourselves, but there are specific beats in The Force Awakens that therefore it diminishes because there are significant looks that Han and Chewie give Rey while they're flying in the Falcon. Like they look at her like, right, this girl, yeah, mm-hmm, her. Which I, well, and, you know, you and, can and say, I mean, well, they're just noticing
I
she's
just
special.
I just
want to
add to that,
you know.
Kylo says, what girl? And he grabs right. the guy by the throat. So it makes it feel like this girl is somebody important.
Yes. Like Kylo, you can explain. I mean, the thing is, you can explain all of that stuff away. That's fine. But again, it gets to, I'm fine with the subversion of expectation of how a story's going to go. But you have to really commit to the gravity of it. And I think that there is a hedge with the comedy and with a couple of the story beats where they hedge Rey's parentage. And I think that's why, I think that's really what people are responding to with it, is they're looking at it and they would be fine with it if it was dealt with weight through the entire film. But it's almost like it's inserted suddenly. Like you have her encounter in the cave, you have all of this build, you have all this, oh yeah, they're nobody. Like, I think that could be disorienting for people, you know?
I think that you really do have something because, you know, just because you subvert expectations doesn't mean that that's a good thing. That's neither a good thing or a bad thing. It's actually how well it serves the story. And Rian Johnson has said, you know, for him, he felt like the hardest thing Rey could hear at that moment was that her parents were nobody because it's meant so much to her. In the same way that he felt like in Empire, Luke learning that Vader is his father is the hardest thing that he can hear at that moment. Which I think has some validity to it because Rey hearing that and not wanting to believe that her parents are these nobodies is a difficult thing. But I feel as though the movie with Rey and who she is doesn't do a good job of continually using that. She has her moment in the cave, but the rest of the time, I don't know. I just don't feel like the thread and the theme there is really as strong as it could be. And I get sidestepping it, and I think, sadly, I feel like I have to say, I have to see episode 9 now to see how they handle all this, to know whether or not this will actually, I could say it played out well, like they were able to use that story point well then in the next film, or if they just again kind of sidestep it to where we're all just left in the lurch, you know, because the problem is that too, you leave too many unanswered questions in a show, a TV show, or in a movie series, and you begin to lose fans because you're not answering enough questions in a satisfactory way. I hate to pull this out, and you might disagree.
I got to hold on here. I know what's coming. I feel like
the X-Files did that done that.
Stomp on the X-Files all you want to. Go ahead.
But I also feel like there were people who felt like, you know, Lost did that, where it didn't answer all the questions that it set up, okay, and some of them were important. Now, I'm not trashing. I'm not trashing Lost.
I know you're not.
But I'm just saying that those are two places where shows I can specifically think of, you know, where they really set up these really huge questions, right? Massive questions for the characters and everything, and then don't actually answer all of them in a way that makes any sense or feels to connect, you know? And I kind of feel like that's where we are, like that the sequel trilogy has turned into the X-Files of Star Wars.
That I'll give you. X-Files is one thing. Lost was a different thing because Lost started to go down this path of explaining everything in too fine detail. And they started painting themselves in a corner in season 3. And that's when they course corrected and they said, we're not going to do that. We're going to leave some things unanswered. I'm fine with that. I think that the X-Files thing is apt because the X-Files started over-answering things. And they started setting things up, and then you'd find out, like, you know, Cancer Man's past. And it was like, oh, well, that's a bummer. You know, like, when you find out that... I'm glad you brought up X-Files, because when you find out that that Cancer Man, Cigarette Smoking Man, as he was later called, was a nobody who was a hack writer trying to make it, and this... You know, like, he has kind of a sad story about him. Fans reacted a lot the same way that people are reacting to Rey's question of parentage and certain things in The Last Jedi. And Chris Carter and the creators of X-Files backpedaled really fast and said, essentially what you're saying with Kylo, oh, well, that's the Lone Gunman's version of his past. That's not necessarily 100% true. And so there's this built-in out for people to say, oh, well, Kylo's lying to her. Kylo could have been lying to her. Kylo could have... No, her parents were nobody. Unless they decide... Unless J.J. Abrams follows his instincts, as we all know, to have big, showy, explosive things and, you know, and story points, and then say, no, that's not true. But if this series is over today, that's who her parents are. And it's... I'm fine with it. I really think it's the execution of the film overall that is what is making people reject that story point along with some other ones. I really think that's the rocky road of acceptance with this, is if it had been done, like if you're going to call back to Empire, that scene carries so much weight. Everything has built to that moment for 2 hours. You're on the edge of your seat. What is going to happen? Whereas this is treated in the middle, relative middle of the film, as first off, we've had humor undercutting all of these serious moments. And then, oh, and by the way, your folks are nobody. Like it's not given enough of a thud. And that's why people, I think, are backpedaling and saying, no, Kylo's lying. No, does that make sense?
Yeah, because, you know, I think you're right. Maybe this is the thing. I feel like the movie is trying to do too much with too many characters to really focus in on the core. So let's just take Empire, okay? We've boiled this story down to three characters. It's Luke on his mission, and then Han and Leia. There's all this other crap happening with the Empire and the Rebellion. But we've boiled the story down to only three characters that we're really following. And then, of course, you know, we end up bringing in Darth Vader there at the climax with Luke to accentuate that and to really add something to his story. But it's a personal story about these three characters. The Last Jedi has like 12 characters. You know, I mean, we have Finn, we have Poe, we have Leia, we have Rey, we have Luke. I mean, that's five alone. And then we have all those side characters like, you know, Haldo and Rose and, Chewbacca. And I mean, like, the list kind of starts to go on and on. And so that's like eight characters that you're trying to find a way or more to service instead of really focusing on the story. Like, this should, I think, have felt more like it is devoted to Rey and who she is with Luke. And then you need to figure out a way to make the other side of the story fit into that. But this really should have been all about Rey and all about Luke and their connection with Kylo and Snoke and the interaction between the dichotomy between that, right? Like the old Jedi Master.
You know what?
Training the hopeful new Padawan and the dark side user training and manipulating his young Padawan and the dichotomy between that. Like you find that focus there. I think you that answer will be much more satisfactory as an audience member because you would have found a way to have been so focused on Rey that it would have felt like that weight would have come. It would have hit you like a ton of bricks.
I think you've really hit on something here. it's not just the fact that, like, oh, it should have been these people this way and relating this way. It's the fact that there's no sense of a main character at all. The Force Awakens is Rey's movie. Yes, I'd say that's a fair comment.
Oh, absolutely. It's about Rey. One of the reasons that I mean, for all the grief that I sometimes give The Force Awakens, I love that movie because I love Rey in that movie.
And in this, it very much plays that it's as if she has lost control of that story. Like, she's not as... And I know that there are people that liked the film that are listening to what I'm saying. They're saying, well, what about the scene in the cave? What about her training with Luke? Because, and this is what I keep harping on, because of the structure of the film, because of Finn and Rose going off, because of Benicio del Toro coming in, because of Haldo, because of Super Leia, because of Poe, because of this, because of that, we lose focus on Rey. When the film settles down and focuses on her and it becomes her story again, the film becomes engaging. And then when it moves away from her, it becomes less so. And I think that is what you've really hit on here, is that Empire Strikes Back had those two plot lines running parallel to each other. But at the very least, they all started together. Fine, right. We'll take that off of the table. But the secondary plot or whatever of Vader pursuing Han and Leia felt like it was connected to the Luke thing, because it
right.
was.
And they absolutely connect it too. Yeah.
And people will sit there and say, well, Rey goes to Kylo and everything like, but it's not being done with a purpose of, there's no real sense of a connective tissue. And that's why I've said, right. I'm curious to see this 3-hour cut I've heard about, because maybe it fills that out. Maybe it connects things better. Because I think that's really what undercuts a lot of this Rey's parentage thing, and then the other stuff right. that radiates out of it.
Well, and I think the other thing is that when we get to that moment of, like, who is Rey, and she makes the decision not to take Kylo's hand, we haven't sufficiently answered the question of why Rey would say no to him. Why yeah. she is so good. Now, again, I love the idea, and I think it's very strong that we are personally responsible for ourselves. And Rey, I think, seems to intrinsically understand that and be that, even though she's a character much like Harry Potter who shouldn't be this good, but she is. Dig into that more. Dig into that in the film about why Rey is drawn to the dark side and what it might offer her, but at the same time ends up rejecting it. You know, why Rey is offered the thing that she wants the most by the dark side, which is to know who her parents are. Why is it that she rejects Kylo then? What is it that allows her to be able to say no? And I don't feel like the film, even though it's there and I love it, this idea of choices and experiences and being responsible for who you are and choosing right, and you have the choice to do that, and only you are responsible for your own choices, and only you can then try and be responsible for those around you and help them, but you can't make those choices for them. You know, all those things, like, that's all great stuff. But that moment of her saying no to Kylo, I think, doesn't have that weight, especially when she's just heard the hardest thing she's ever had to hear. Why doesn't she want to burn it down? Why doesn't she just want to be like, F all of this, yes, I'll join you, because then I can make my own destiny? You know, like, and
it's,
so...
It's a valid... I think it's a valid question, regardless of what anybody listening might think. I think that's a valid question, because Rey has had a very difficult and terrible life.
Yeah.
She has found yes. out that she's got this special power. But life itself, we've talked about the difference between Anakin and Luke being that presence of the family life, that's what grounded Luke. Rey right, has right. a life more akin to Anakin's than to Luke's.
Yes. Yes.
So it would actually make sense for Rey to turn evil, because she doesn't have the same sort of structure. She doesn't even have a mom. Anakin had a right. mom that kept him on the straight and narrow for almost 10 years. Ray doesn't even have that. So I think you've got a very valid question.
Well, and again, I think this is the thing. By flipping Kylo and Ray and that storyline then, where Kylo has the Luke parentage, basically, you know, he's got good parents. They don't seem to be awful parents. I mean, I don't think Han and Leia are the world's worst parents. You know, they love him. They care for him. You know, he knows that. He even says, I didn't hate my dad. You know, like, even if he's indifferent to his father, he doesn't hate him. There, you know, there's nothing there that seems to. So they flip that. But I think what you need to give us then is we saw why Anakin chooses what he chooses, right? Because of the experiences that he had. He could not get over those experiences to do what was right. He wanted the control. What is it about Rey that allows her to be able to say, you know what? No, I don't want that control. I realize that I'm not the one in control here. The Force is. Like, she instinctively knows all of these things, and I think it's awesome that she does. But I don't have sufficient reason yet to understand why she can make that choice. What's going on in her mind? Well, you know, whereas, like, say, again, going back to Empire specifically, when Luke says no to Vader, he would rather die because of his experience in the cave. He would rather die than turn into that person. Like, he puts that experience to use, right? This is where I wanted Rey's cave scene, I think, to have more to it so that it gave us the reason why she chooses. Is her just seeing herself in that mirror, her realization that I must make the right choice because it doesn't matter who my parents are. It's still down on me to make the right choice.
You know, I think that's interesting in a sense, but the philosophy of these sequel movies, these sequel episodes so far, is therefore in conflict with itself because Ben is referred to in The Force Awakens as simply having too much Vader, as if evil is something you inherit. And so, you know, he was always going to turn out this way. He just has too much Vader in him. So then, I mean, I guess it just makes sense then, as much as we're sitting here talking about choice, that Rey's simply born good. And so it undercuts the idea of choice because these movies seem to be saying, well, you're just born good or bad. Well, so free will's a lie. Great. That's definitely a modern philosophy that's coming through in the films. And boy, that's sad.
I mean, unless there's some sort of force predestination that we don't know about, which never has been a thing. There have
force
been
Calvinism.
but I mean, the force obviously seems to have a will, and we've heard about that, right? But I think, you know, the question of who Rey is, I think, is a fantastic question, you know, and whether it matters who her parents are, I think it does spur her on into choosing to be who she is going to be, which is going to be somebody who, I guess, mimics what she saw the legend of Luke Skywalker be, which is selfless and self-sacrificial. Which is wonderful, and somebody who also is willing to show grace when it's not earned, which again is very biblical. She is all of these things, and yet I don't feel like the film again builds up to a place that allows us to fully understand why she makes that choice, other than that she just makes that choice because she's Rey, and that seems like there's not enough character development from. Especially this thing who just seems to be so. I mean, Rey is, and this is what brings me back to the question: is Rey just a new vergence in the Force, who almost is Jedi Messiah like?
I could be sure, you know, like okay,
like she has the choice to do wrong, right? Like she is tempted.
Does she?
No, I mean she has the choice. But if we're agreeing
that with the statement in The Force Awakens, there's just too much Vader in him, and then Rey makes the good choice just because she's just a good person, even though she's been a slave and mistreated all her life, well, then, you know, like, then her choices are inevitable at that point.
Okay, so then it brings me back to thinking something. I was listening to an interview with Rian Johnson. He did with the director's podcast, where the directors interview each other. Spike Jonze interviewed him. And he said that, you know, he grew up religious, going to church. And I'm wondering if that's come out in Rey. That Rey is this Jedi Messiah. That she is the character who, like Jesus, has the opportunity and is given the opportunity to sin, but chooses not to.
Well, I mean, that opens up a whole sticky wicket there. Especially,
I mean, I'm just trying to make sense.
I know,
of what we
have. I'm really more fixated on this idea of conflict of free will versus determinism that seems to be apparent in these main characters, and it's really, I think that's going to drive me batty for a very, very long time. But be that as it may, I'll just go on record one last time, saying I'm okay with her parents being nobodies, but I doubt that J.J. Abrams' instincts will be to leave that alone in episode 9.
Well, and that is the thing where I wondered, after seeing the film a couple of times, if they would use that to their advantage, that, you know, basically, oh, we got that out of the way, so nobody's really expecting there to be another answer. And so then we could wow them with, oh yeah, raise a virgin in the Force, or raise, you know, parents or this, or, you know, something like that, where it made things come together in that sense, where all three films then kind of joined together to make this cohesive whole that we want it to be, hopefully. So I'm okay if that's the answer, but I still would just want there to be a little bit more explanation then to the character of Rey herself as to why she then makes these choices. Because like you said, then you come down to this, is she just determined to be good? Like, is it, you know, not even just self-determination, but is it predestination that she is just a good person? Or is it something else? And that's the thing where if this movie had that focus of it being Rey and Luke and Snoke and Kylo, and having, you know, her be the Anakin character and him be the Luke character, but then they've twisted it, you know, all of those things, if it had been done in a better way, I hate to say that, if it had been done in a better way, that moment would have, like, probably exploded in our minds, like, oh my gosh. But instead, I just feel like I have questions to my questions about my questions.
Well, some people would say that's a very good thing, and we'll want to undoubtedly discuss that with you online, Matt. So where can they find you?
Well, they could find me all over the place. I'm Matt Rushing02 on Twitter, also on Instagram. You can find me here on the network doing Owlpost with Drea Kaufman as we talk about Harry Potter. Now, we are walking through each and every chapter of the series one chapter at a time. It's a joy, so just make sure that you check it out. We have a blast talking about Harry Potter there. You can also find me on the 602 Club over on Trek FM, as we already mentioned. John and I were over there with our friend Bruce doing our review of The Last Jedi, so check that out, plus every other geek topic we can cram into that show. And then I do The Orb over there with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And one last show I do is with my friend Courtney, and that's called Cinema Stories. We talked about The Last Jedi too, but we specifically just talked about kind of the morals, meanings, messages, and the spirituality of the film. So if that's something you're interested in, check that out. John, I'm not the only one who just has way too much going on. Where can everybody find you online?
Well, you can find me walking around with a zombie-like stare on all of my social media accounts, where I'm known as Kessel Junkie. And you can find me right here on the Nerd Party Network, co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. And then if you can't get enough of me and Mike Schindler, go on over to Trek FM and listen to us talk about, right now, Quentin Tarantino on Stage 9, because Quentin Tarantino is on the path to becoming a Star Trek creator, and that's who we talk about on Stage 9. And of course, I am co-hosting Words with Nerds, the podcast that started it all for me, with my pal Craig. And with all of that said, I think there's only one thing left to say, Matt. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John,
negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.